to the American Revolution podcast. I really have to apologize this week for the delay. I know that the last time we were together, I said that I would be putting out a episode in 2 weeks, and it's been about three now. I've been dealing with a lot. I made the move to Delaware, which was fine, and the new job, a little more stressful than I would have liked it to be. But then, of course, I got a call from home that there's been a death in the family. So for the last few weeks, I've been kind of all over the place and just have not had a mind to deal with talking about the American Revolution. But I have got myself all situated. Work is great. Everything's okay at home now. So now I'm ready to start our next fun-filled adventure into the American Revolution. And that is going to be Episode 12, The First Continental Congress. So when we spoke last time, we talked about the Intolerable Acts. What the Intolerable Acts were, their effects on the colonies, and the colonial reaction to them. Now, there are many separate attempts made by the individual colonies to talk to British Parliament about repealing the Intolerable Acts, but these fall on deaf ears. It's actually the colony of Virginia that actually puts forth an idea in the House of Burgess on May 24, 1774. They say that the only way we are going to get the ear of Britain and the Parliament is not through separate attempts to entreat the British Parliament into discussing the problem and working with us, but if a unified colony will gather together and do it as one. And that's what they do. Not long after the House of Burgess votes on the idea of a Continental Congress, Massachusetts follows suit, and they begin picking delegates. In September 1774, the colonies are now organized into the First Continental Congress. Delegates from 12 of the 13 colonies would meet at the Carpenter Hall in Philadelphia. Now, we say 12 because Georgia actually abstains. Georgia abstained, though, because they were dealing with a problem with the Native Americans, and so they needed British support. So Congress convenes from September 5th to October 24th. And this is the first time in the history of colonial America that we will see a real attempt at a representative government within the colonies. Now, of course, this would be met with difficulties. You have to remember, the mixed group that we have in the colonies is covering all groups of people in any normal social pyramid. We have planters from the Deep South, merchants from the mid-states and the cities, and then we have small-town farmers and seafaring folk from New England. So there's a real eclectic group of colonists that are, or delegates, I should say, that are meeting in Philadelphia. One thing that I always found interesting was how different they were, not only in the way they carried themselves, but the way that they talked in the Congress. Patrick Henry, delegate from Virginia, this is recorded by John Adams in his diary on September 6th. Government is dissolved. Fleets and armies and the present state of things show that the government is dissolved. The distinctions between Virginians, Pennsylvanians, New Yorkers, and New Englanders are no more. I am not a Virginian, but an American. I go upon the supposition that government is at an end. All America is thrown into one mass. Now, this really is the hallmark of the Revolution. Patrick Henry, man, when he talked, he really did it right. He did a great job of showing the people that we are not colonies anymore, but we are one people. We may have been descendants of Englishmen, or maybe even some were born in England, but we are one people. And Patrick Henry really puts that point forward. There are, though, some of those that will resist the hard-line stance that men like Patrick Henry will take. Joseph Galloway, for example, delegate of Pennsylvania, from the Journals of the Continental Congress, September 28, 1774. Desirous as I am to promote the freedom of the colonies, I beseech you, by the respect you are bound to pay to the instructions of your constituents, by the regard you have for the honor of your country, and as you wish to avoid war with Great Britain, which must terminate, at all events, in the ruin of America, not to rely on the denial of Parliament. Because whatever protestations may be made to the contrary, it will prove to the world that we intend to throw off our allegiance to the state and to involve two countries in all horrors of civil war. Now, this does not make Joseph Galloway the anti-patriot. No, he's views the situation in a light that a lot of Americans will see, especially in some of the more deep southern states because of their close trade with Britain. They really see that this civil war may not end well, and it puts them into fear. It is a fear that will drive the attitudes and the actions of men that we will talk about later on in the war. And Joseph Galloway hits it right, that it is a slippery slope, and to involve us in a civil war with Britain could be dangerous. You got to remember, he's saying these words not in 1780 when the war is all but won for America. He's saying this in 1774 when the first shots haven't even been fired yet. So he is a man that sees the situation and wants to find a diplomatic way about it. We talked last time about the Suffolk Resolves. Put forth by Dr. Joseph Warren, these were a set of resolves that were penned by Dr. Joseph Warren, and they were calling for the complete cutoff of trade with Great Britain. Now, this, of course, put Massachusetts into hot water, but nonetheless, they went forward with it. And so, on September 17th, 1774, Paul Revere, yes, that Paul Revere, will actually bring the resolves to Congress, where it is endorsed by the Congress. So now the colonies are unified in their belief that they are going to cut off trade with Britain to try and pressure them into thinking about repealing the Intolerable Acts. The next order of business would be to discuss their course of action. How are they going to solve the problem? Because cutting off trade is just going to end up hurting both sides in the long run, but as we've seen in past experiences, the British government doesn't really bend easily. So there's no guarantee that they would be able, that cutting off trade to Britain would bend them to their will. We're actually going to hear from Joseph Galloway again, because he put forward a plan of the union of Great Britain and the colonies. It started out by saying, "Resolve that this Congress will apply to His Majesty for the redress of grievances under which his faithful subjects in America labor, and assure him that the colonies held abhorrent to the idea to being considered independent communities on the British government, and a most ardent desire to establish a political union not only among themselves, but with the mother state, upon choosing principles of safety and freedom which are essential in the constitution of all free governments, and particularly that of the British legislature." Now, what does any of this mean? What he's really saying is that it is imperative that Britain and America get together and really work out these problems, because the Americans have grievances and they need to be heard, and the British Parliament needs to be willing and sympathetic to the plight of the Americans. What Galloway is asking for is not for the American colonies to go right for a revolution, and he's also asking for the British Parliament to be sympathetic and listen to our grievances and allow the Americans to appoint a group that will review any laws that Parliament puts out And this representative body that speaks for the American colonies would be able to veto any law that they feel is not fair to the American colonists. Now, that doesn't mean that the law is vetoed by British Parliament. It just means that it won't take effect in America. Now, as great an idea as this could be, it ends up being voted down by one vote. It was way too complicated. You have to have a representative body ready to go, and London would have to approve it, and I personally don't believe that London was ever going to approve the idea of allowing the colonists to pick and choose whatever laws that they want to follow. I don't know. To me, that's just not going to happen. But it was an attempt, and it was a solid attempt by Joseph Galloway, but it's not going to work for us. So what do you do? The answer is simple. First and foremost, stop drinking tea. There is no more consumption of tea from the East India Company. Next, imports from Britain would be prohibited as of December 1st. So that's going to be a real hit to the wallet of Parliament. The next course of action. Congress agrees to reconvene in May 1775. It's at this Congress that they're going to decide whether they should cut off exports to Britain in September of that year. Now, to just give a little bit of foreshadowing, the plans that they lay out for the Second Continental Congress are not going to come to fruition. Because as we know, in September of that year, the war would have already begun. And now the Congress will have to decide what to do as a course of action to execute this war, and most importantly, win the war. Their last order of business has to be to petition King George to repeal the Intolerable Acts. Now, as we all know, this never actually happened because King George just ignored the pleas of the American colonies. So he completely bypasses their petition and just ignores it completely. Probably not such a great idea to ignore the colonies that are trying to petition you to a course of peace, and you're pushing them to a course of war. That's going to do it for this week. Now, I promise, since this is actually going out in the middle of the week, I'm probably going to get the next episode out in the beginning of next week, like I have been. Usually Mondays and Tuesdays are my good days. So next week, we're going to go into Paul Revere. He's the next one we're going to talk about in our character studies. And then we're going to lead on into the beginning part of our war. We're almost there, folks. We have gotten through the rigors and the boring parts of the beginning part of the war, or at least the beginning part of the revolution, by talking about all the Acts of Parliament. So in a few short weeks, the first shots are going to be fired. So we're going to get ready for that. Now, this week, unfortunately, there is no recommendation for a book. You see, I looked around, and I hadn't personally read any books that gave a great outline of the First Continental Congress, so I assumed that there may have been a book or two that covered the subject. And I looked around online to see if there was anything there, and there's some books out there, very few. The Story of the First Continental Congress by C.L. Gammon, a couple of others, but I don't know that anyone that I have ever worked with has read them, nor have I seen any reviews online about them. So this week, I'm just going to leave you without a review. I'm not going to leave you without a recommendation. And we're going to pick it up next week when we talk about Paul Revere, and I promise that we will have a book recommendation for him because, well, he's Paul Revere. So till next time, this is the American Revolution Podcast. Everyone have a great week, and as always, keep your powder dry.